In the ongoing creation evolution debate, there's a common story we hear is that the evolutionists today kind of like to put themselves in the place of Galileo, and the creationists are seen in the role of the narrow, bigoted religionists of the church. And that's not quite true. And there's some very startling implications if we look at that story, which is what I want to look at on today's show.
Fact is, I have very logical reasons for believing in things that logic and reason cannot teach me. It's kind of ironic, but the more complexity science finds in life, the more unlikely becomes the whole scenario and theory they use to explain the origins of life. The amazing thing that quantum physics shows is that nature, at its most fundamental level, strains human credulity and belief in ways that biblical faith never does.
Hi, Cliff Goldstein here, and welcome to the show. This is part of a series I've been doing called Philosophy and Faith, and we've done so far 10 in this series, starting with the pre-Socratics and then working our way to Socrates and Plato. And now we finally made our way to Aristotle, even though coming to him from where we started covered only a few centuries. They were some incredibly fertile centuries, about 6 centuries before Christ, going a few hundred years to Aristotle, who in some ways is kind of the climax to this very fertile period in ancient Greek thought. Now, it's not that ancient Greek thought ended with him. In fact, it didn't. I mean, you could probably logically argue that ancient Greek philosophy has never ended, that we live with the legacy today. But there's no question that in some ways that the high point or the end point of this amazing explosion of learning, sometimes dubbed the Greek Enlightenment, culminated in Aristotle. You know, I once heard a lecturer on Aristotle say that if you could imagine thousands of years ago, some aliens from another world wanted to increase human knowledge and wisdom and understanding, and so they dropped Aristotle into the world in order to do that, to do just that. The idea being that maybe these aliens were thinking, hey, these folks aren't making that much progress intellectually, so let's speed them along a bit and send them Aristotle in there to jumpstart things a bit. Now, that might be an exaggeration, but only somewhat, I would say. Many have considered him the greatest moral mind that ever lived, and with pretty good reason, too, though I could think I could say easily that he has been one of the most influential moral minds that ever lived. The scope of this one man's influence has been astounding, especially too when you consider how much he got wrong. Now, on the other hand, if you've been following this series, if you've been following what I've been doing, you'll know that these ancient Greeks got so much wrong. And for my mind, though, what's amazing about them, though, is not even that they tried to get it right, but it is how they tried. How they tried to understand the world. We see in their writing some of the earliest known attempts to seek to understand the world on its own terms by using their sight and their sense and their intellect alone. They tried to figure it all out. And as such, for the most part, they made a royal mess of it. And that includes Aristotle. And yet, given the powerful influence that he had, his errors have come down long through the centuries, though I'm somewhat hesitant to use the word errors because they seem like errors to us now. But who knows down the road how we might view some of these things later. That is, our views about the way things are change often, don't they? Anyway, despite his brilliance, he did get a lot wrong, at least at what we would say is wrong. I mean, Who takes seriously his idea that each planet needs about 40 or 50 gods to keep it in orbit? Or that rocks fall to the earth because he believed in a very hierarchical enclosed universe, which each thing belonging in its place? And so rocks fall because their natural places in the hierarchy of things is at the bottom. Or that fire rises because in this cosmic hierarchy, the place of fire is above, is high, and therefore that's why fire ascends. Now, it's interesting, too, that he used many proofs. He had many proofs that the earth was not in motion but stationary, and that the stars and the planets and all them circled the earth in perfect circles. And you know, he had some pretty compelling reasons to believe that too. And Aristotle's view of what we would call God is pretty bizarre, at least to what most of us in the West understand the idea. Aristotle knew nothing of a personal God, nothing of a compassionate, loving God involved in the world and involved in the things of the world, as God is commonly understood in most Western theologies. Aristotle's God was a really vastly different. He was all but indifferent to our world. This God, which he got to through a series of logical steps, is really, oh, I guess the best way to describe it, his God is pure thought, doing nothing but thinking about himself. Or as I heard one professor say it, God is simply nous, or mind, that is nousing itself. In other words, his God is simply nousing itself. Okay, Aristotle thought that our universe and our world included existed for all eternity. That is, it was never created, but it always existed from all times, a view that I think most people today would think is wrong. Of course, to be fair, any man that is going to pursue in great depth just about every known field of thought is going to get a number of things wrong. And Aristotle was no exception, believe me. And yet, despite that, I say it again, it's hard to exaggerate the influence that this one man has had on the history of intellectual thought through the ages. And this leads us right to the point that I want to get into in this talk. And in order to do that, we need to jump ahead now almost 2,000 years from his day and age and come to the 1600s, to Italy, and to a man known to the world as Galileo, one of the most famous, and to one of the most famous of all books in the Western corpus, Galileo's Dialogue Concerning Two World Systems. This was Galileo's defense of the Copernican view of the cosmos, which had a moving Earth that is not in the center of the universe, and that's a view that got him in trouble with the church authorities. Now, there's no sense going over the story of Galileo in the church. Most of us know about it, or most of us know something about it. And it has become the classical story of supposedly how a narrow and bigoted religious institution tried to get in the way of modern progress and so forth. And admittedly, to a degree, there's truth to that. But it's not quite as simple as that. Not that most things in life are so simple anyway. In fact, it's much more complicated, much more nuanced than the usual renditions give it. And that's what I want to talk about today into our first foray into Aristotle. Anyway, the book again, The Dialogue Concerning Natural Religions, made history. And it's the book that got Galileo in so much trouble that he was forced, under the threat of torture, I might add, to proclaim some of the most famous words in history. And let me read this to you, because I think what we've got here is important. I, Galileo, son of the late Vincenzo Galileo Florentine, aged 70 years, arranged personally before this tribunal and kneeling before you, most eminent reverend lord cardinals, inquisitor generals, against heretical depravity throughout the entire Christian commonwealth. Listen to this. I swear that I always believed and do believe, and by God's help will in the future believe, all that is held, preached, and taught by the Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church. But whereas, after an injunction had been judicially intimated to me by this holy office,
to the effect that I must altogether abandon the false opinion that the sun is the center of the world and immovable, and that the earth is not the center of the world and moves, and that I must not hold, defend, or teach in anything whatsoever, verbally or in writing, the said false doctrine, and after it have been notified to me that the said doctrine was contrary to the scripture. Therefore, desiring to remove from the minds of your eminence and of all faithful Christians the vehement suspicion justly conceived against me, with a sincere heart and unfeigned faith, I abjure, curse, and detest the aforesaid errors and heresies, and generally every other heresy, error, and sect whatsoever contrary to the said Holy Catholic Church. Wow, that's a mouthful. With a sincere heart and with unfeigned faith, maybe. A sincere heart, I really doubt it. Anyway, what I want to do now is I want to read a few excerpts from the Dialogue Concerning Two World Systems, the book that got him in so much trouble. And as I read, I want you to listen and see if you can find a common single denominator, a theme that keeps cropping up in the passages that I read. Anyway, here again, Dialogue Concerning Two World Systems by Galileo Galilei. Page 18. Quote, this is the cornerstone basis and foundation of the entire structure of the Aristotelian upon which we are superimposed all other celestial properties. Freedom from gravity and levity, immutability, incorruptibility, exemption from all mutations except local ones. Page 23. I might add that neither Aristotle or you can ever prove that the earth is de facto the center of the universe. If any center may be assigned to the universe, we should rather find the sun to be placed there. Page 56. But seeing, on the other hand, the great authority that Aristotle has gained universally, considering the number of famous interpreters who have toiled to explain his meanings, and observing that all other sciences so useful and necessary to mankind base a large part of their value and reputation upon Aristotle's credit. And then now this is a dialogue, and he's got the last quote, or another quote here. He's got a guy named Simplico. Simplico is confused and perplexed, and I seem to hear him say, who would there be to settle our controversies were Aristotle deposed? What other author should we follow in the schools, the academies, and the universities? What other philosopher has written the whole of natural philosophy so well arranged without admitting a single conclusion? Page 110. I do not mean that a person should not listen to Aristotle. I applaud the reading and careful study of his works, and I reproach only those who give themselves up as slaves to him in such a way as to subscribe blindly to everything he says and to take it as an inviolable decree without looking for other reasons. And finally, page 131. You are angry that Aristotle cannot speak? Yet I tell you that if Aristotle were here, he would either be convinced by us or he would pick our arguments to pieces and persuade us of something better. Now, you've heard these quotes. What is the one thing that all these quotes that I just read have in common? Well, if you were listening, you realize, what was the one thing they had in common? Of course, they all mention Aristotle. In fact, when I read this book a couple of years ago, that's when it jumped out and hit me that here they were about two millennia after Aristotle, and he is really in the center of the debate between Galileo and the church. Now, this course helps prove my point, which I said about how influential Aristotle was. I mean, that here's poor Galileo with all this experimental evidence, with all his scientific evidence, and yet he finds himself going up against a wall, and that wall is a pagan Greek philosopher who had been dead for almost 2,000 years. Now, there are many different angles and ways to look at this.
but I want to look at one in particular. But before I get there, I think it's important to see what's happening here is a classic, so to speak, example of what has been called how the scientific revolution got started. You see, what Galileo was doing was fighting against the old authorities. Now, Galileo didn't start this fight. Many trace it to an Englishman named Francis Bacon, who wrote this line, which kind of says it all. I love this line. This is Bacon. "I cannot be called on to abide by the sentence of a tribunal which is itself on trial." Wow, that's heavy. "I cannot be called on to abide by the sentence of a tribunal which is itself on trial." Bacon challenged the entire intellectual foundation of his time. He refused to be condemned by the very system that he himself was challenging, which had its roots in Aristotle. You see, Aristotle at this time was known as the philosopher. He was the source. And now, a century or so later, you've got Galileo doing the same thing. Each quote I read to you had Aristotle right in the middle. And the quote that I think that says so much is this one. Let me read it again. "And I reproach only those who give themselves up as slaves to him in such a way as to subscribe blindly to everything he says and take it as an inviolable decree without looking for any other reasons." Now, you know, there's an irony here, too. And the irony is, because Galileo was fighting against the slavish devotion to the ancient texts, as opposed to observation and experiment and teachings of the senses. And yet, this is pretty much how Aristotle himself sought to gain knowledge. In other words, let me read you. Here's the opening line of his Metaphysics. And this is Aristotle, and it reads, "All men by nature desire to know. An indication of this is delight we take in our senses. For even apart from their usefulness, they are love for themselves, and above all, the sense of sight." See, one can see right here, right from the start, a shot across the bow of his great teacher, Plato, who built his whole epistemology on the idea that what our senses give us is illusionary, weak, and so on, mere shadows of the true reality which exists in the world of forms. If you remember in an earlier talk, we talked about Plato's cave in which he saw, you know, the world and, as it appears to us, and then the ultimate reality which was outside of our sight. Well, Aristotle had quite a different spin on things. He wanted to study the world as it was. He was a scientist, a biologist, and he wanted to look at the world for what it is, or at least as it appeared to our senses. And, you know, as we know, and I've talked before many times, our senses can deceive us. And they did Aristotle, who believed in a stationary earth that sat in the center of the cosmos, and all the planets moved around it. Anyway, there's an irony here, and this is the point, shouldn't be missed. A man who in antiquity promoted studying the world on its own terms eventually became codified and canonized and turned into authority in its own right, even to the point here where, as Galileo discovered, that if you had experimental evidence that contradicted him or seemed to contradict him, you had to truck the experimental and evidence and go with the old authorities, in this case, Aristotle. That is, instead of taking the world on its own terms, which is what Aristotle did, everything had to be filtered through Aristotle. That's why in the dialogue, Galileo more than once claimed that if Aristotle would hear, he would agree with Galileo had found. Maybe, maybe not, though. That is a fact. I know, have no doubt he would have been fascinated by Galileo's experiments, especially the telescope. Now, remember now, let's get to the point here. We come to what I consider the most fascinating part of this whole episode between Galileo and the church. Remember, Galileo was brought up on charges of heresy. Remember, he declared in his incantation, in his recantation, rather, though it was probably more an incantation. Therefore, desiring to remove from the minds of your eminences and all faithful Christians this vehement suspicion justly conceived against me, with sincere heart and unfeigned faith, I abjure, curse, and detest aforesaid errors and heresies, and generally every other error, heresy, and sect whatsoever, contrary to the said holy church. Heresies? What heresies? Well, the central one was that the earth was not the center of the universe and the earth moved. Those were the specific things that got in trouble, though he said, well, supposedly other things against the Bible as well. But now, listen to this, because this is the crucial point, and this is the point I want to make here on my first talk with Aristotle. On Aristotle. You know, I've been reading my Bible for more than 30 years. And guess what? Guess what? I know of absolutely no text in the Bible which teaches that the earth is the center of the universe. I mean, it's not in the Bible. The Bible never talks about the earth as somehow geographically the center of the cosmos. It's not there. The Bible doesn't address it. It's not a biblical teaching. But then, so then, how does Galileo get in trouble for teaching heresy? For teaching the heresy that the sun, not the earth, is the center of the universe? Well, the answer is easy. It's not in the Bible, but it is in Aristotle. In his cosmology, the earth sat at the center of the universe and all the stars and planets circled around it. That's Aristotle. That's not Moses. That's not David. That's not Daniel, not Paul, not John, and not Peter. So what do you have here is a prime example of how the church, in this case, the Catholic Church, getting caught up in the culture, in the science of its time, and incorporating the latest and greatest science into its teaching, even though that teaching was not only not a biblical teaching, but as so often that case, that teaching was wrong. You know, I've used this phrase on the show before, from the book of Ecclesiastes, Ein kol hadash tamat hashamesh. Nothing new under the sun. What do I mean? Well, I mean, today there are millions of Christians who are claiming that they can incorporate evolutionary biology, billions of years of the Darwinian massacre, into Christian theology. Now, why do they want to do that? Because just like what the church did in Galileo's time, which was incorporate the latest and greatest scientific worldview, many in the church today are guilty of doing the same thing. The Bible no more teaches evolution than it teaches that the earth is the center of the universe. In fact, I'd say while the Bible is silent about the location of the earth in relation to the rest of the cosmos, it's sure not silent on how humanity came into existence, and it certainly wasn't through evolution. For some, though, that doesn't matter. The latest and greatest in science teaches evolution. And so just like the clerics who are ready to torture Galileo over his teaching, some in Christianity today are doing the same thing. They're conflating the latest science with the Bible and trying to meld them. Thus, here's the irony. This is the irony here. Though many of these theistic evolutions want to see themselves as the modern Galileos fighting against the bigotry of a narrow-minded church, the opposite is true. The theistic evolutionists are simply repeating the error of the medieval Catholic Church, which is trying to bring the latest and greatest science into the Bible. Though the Roman Catholic Church only brought into it something that the Bible never addressed, you know, they were still willing to prosecute poor Galileo over it. In contrast, the theistic evolutionists are doing much, much worse. They're trying to bring into the Bible, a teaching that is directly contrary to the Bible. Again, as I said, the Bible is silent. The Bible is silent on the location of the earth in the cosmos. It doesn't say anything about the earth is at the center and all the planets circle it and they move in perfect circles. It says really nothing about that. But the Bible is not silent. It's not silent on the creation of humanity, is it? It's very, very clear. Again, where does the Bible teach that the earth is motionless and that the stars and planets move around it? It's not a biblical teaching. It's a topic the Bible does not address. Oh, they use the story of the sun standing still in Joshua and so on, but come on, that's no proof. That's not the issue in the story. That's not the point the story made. It had nothing to do with cosmology. So again, where did the folks get the idea that this is biblical? Where did the folks, why was Galileo's teaching deemed heresy? Why were they ready to burn this, torture this man over a teaching that the Bible never even addressed? Where did the church go wrong? Why was it taught heresy? Well, they're making the same mistake that the theistic evolutions are making today. The reason that they did it back then was Aristotle. Yes, a non-canonical pagan Greek. Not Paul, not Moses, not David, not Jesus. Aristotle, the latest and greatest in science, the science of the time, the premier teaching of the time. And how dare the church go against something like that? You know, and it wouldn't be so bad, and what wouldn't it be so bad if what they were seeking to incorporate from Aristotle were correct. But the horrible fate of history is that for so many centuries, the church had sought to incorporate into the church some of the stuff that Aristotle got wrong. That's what I even titled my show, What Aristotle Got Wrong. And too bad if they could have taken some of the stuff he got right. Instead, they took some of his most blatant errors, brought it to the level of dogma, incorporated it into Christianity, and were ready to put poor Galileo in the royal pokey for who knows how long, all over stuff that the Bible never taught to begin with. You know, we never learn from history, do we? And apparently some professed Christians haven't learned as well. Only again, I make the claim that the mistake that these Darwinian evolutionists, that these theistic evolutionists who claim to be Christians are making is a much bigger error. Because again, there's the Bible is silent about whether the earth moves around the sun or the sun moves around the earth. That's not an issue the Bible addresses. But it does very, very clearly address creation. And it has no room, no place whatsoever for anything like Darwinian evolution. Because, and so their mistakes are even a lot worse, because as wrong as Aristotle was, he wasn't anywhere as wrong as Darwin was. And that's his teaching is the very stuff that these people want to incorporate into Christianity. Can't be done.